This is The Guardian.
Egal welchen Stil Sie pflegen, egal welche Strategie Sie anwenden, wir haben das richtige Tool für Ihr Trading. IC Markets, Ihr Online-Broker für Forex-CFDs. Profitieren Sie von erstklassigen Handelsbedingungen, hervorragendem 24/7-Support und blitzschneller Orderausführung. Starten Sie jetzt durch mit Ihrem Demokonto auf icmarkets.eu/de. IC Markets. Handeln auf einem höheren Level. CFDs sind komplexe Instrumente und bergen aufgrund der Hebelwirkung ein hohes Risiko, schnell Geld zu verlieren. 73,59% der Kunden von Kleinanlegern verlieren Geld beim Handel mit CFDs bei diesem Anbieter. Sie sollten prüfen, ob Sie verstehen, wie CFDs funktionieren und ob Sie das hohe Risiko, Ihr Geld zu verlieren, eingehen können.
Hello, welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. It's the Christmas special mailbag. Your questions about Panto's cats and great goals of pedantry and preparation, your messages of love or indifference and meaning, our messages of Christmas cheer from all the panellists who could be bothered to reply to producer Joel's WhatsApp, and, well, just some filler to fill up 45 minutes of your Christmas when you just want some alone time. All that plus your questions, it is only your questions, and it's the Guardian Football Weekly Christmas special. On the panel today, Jonathan Wilson, welcome.
Morning, how are you doing?
Very good. Philippe Auclair, bonjour, ça va, mon petit lapin?
Ça va, joyeux Noël, Max.
Joyeux Noël, Philippe. Barry Glendenning is alive, welcome.
Hello, Max, how are you?
How's the COVID?
It's not great, I must say. It's not much fun. Now, straight off the bat, a lot of people have had it a hell of a lot worse than I have. But... Yeah. I'm surprised by how sideways it knocked me. It was like a bad cold. Now I've got rid of the sort of the coughing and the sneezing and the temperature, but I just have no energy whatsoever, even less than usual. And but you know, if I just slump over the keyboard halfway through this, yeah, I apologize. This is the most activity I've engaged in almost a week.
Wow, it's exciting to see what Baz is like in the red zone.
We're usually drunk recording this. And I tried a glass of wine on Friday, and not for me, Clive. So if there's one benefit of COVID, it seems to have completely got rid of my appetite for alcohol, which can only be a good thing.
Well, I've been texting you enough just to check you haven't died, Barry.
Yeah.
Because I thought, oh, I hope Barry's all right. And you are, so that's fine.
Well, one of the things I've managed to do during the past 6 days is arrange my friends into a league table of care and consideration for me. So there's a few who live locally, know I am ill, yeah, but still not only haven't inquired as to how I am or offered to bring anything around, but have been in the pub sending me pictures of them having fun. Wilson, who lives, you know, reasonably locally, but not as locally as quite a few of my friends, did offer. It was probably an empty offer. He was hoping I wouldn't accept, and I didn't. Did offer to bring stuff around to me. That's nice. So he's comfortably mid-table. You, with daily sort of check-ins via WhatsApp, you're definitely Champions League. So that's another thing I've learned from COVID is I need new friends.
Okay, let's get on with the... what did you offer, Wilson, by the way? Just anything? Or?
Well, I made the point that he almost certainly had people nearer to him who gave more of a shit than somebody who regards him very much as a moderate colleague. But I said, yeah, if he did need anything, it's not that far for me to go and drop stuff off. I think we're gonna reprise last year's Christmas Day drinks. So we might have to pick a different bench so we don't get besieged by fans.
It was a wonderful picture. The Christmas bench is a beautiful.
Yeah, well,
it's a beautiful picture.
For the second year running, I've had to cancel the same holiday, so we've now pushed it back to October. That seems safer.
You say that.
Well, I know the receptionists at three Central European hotels better than I thought I would.
Question one. There's some football, there's some nonsense. Rodders, what do you hate about Christmas? I'm just looking at who hates things the most. And obviously, it's between Barry and Wilson. It's very hard. It's, like Philippe can't say FIFA, can he, at Christmas? Well, I guess he could, couldn't he? Barry.
I don't hate anything about Christmas, although I have recently got hopelessly addicted to Hallmark Christmas movies. I think that's come up on the past. And I hated the fact that I was watching one the other day and Myra Sorvino was the lead. She has an Oscar. Hallmark Christmas movies should be beneath her, but they clearly aren't. And the reason for that is that Harvey Weinstein ruined her career. So I hate Harvey Weinstein. That's what one thing I hate. The fact that I am watching what should be a twee, saccharine sweet, formulaic heap of shit on Channel 5, and it's making me think about Harvey Weinstein. So that I don't like about Christmas. Otherwise, I don't hate anything about Christmas, but I am starting to get annoyed by people complaining about how heartbroken they're going to be, that they can't be with their families this Christmas. I was having this discussion with my parents the other night, and we all agreed, while it would be nice if we could be together for Christmas, none of us really give a shit that we can't be. Now, maybe my family is more dysfunctional than most. I don't think it is. We all love each other. Maybe we just don't like each other very much. But, I'm completely indifferent to the fact that I can't go home for Christmas. I could not care less. And I think a lot of Irish people going home, it's slightly irresponsible, but it's not for me to tell people what they should or shouldn't do at Christmas. Anyway, but no, I quite like Christmas. I'm into the whole vibe, but I can't think of anything major I dislike about it. Turkey. I don't like turkey for dinner.
No. I think turkey, I was thinking of our pre-pod conversation. I was wondering that maybe turkey could be an element of consensus about what we don't necessarily like about Christmas.
Yeah, I think it's bollocks.
But there you go.
and normally, when there's no COVID and people aren't scared to go to the pub, the one thing I really do hate about Christmas is people who never go to the pub from one end of the year to the other going to the pub for Christmas.
You're such a pub bore, Barry.
Absolutely.
No, he's right, though.
It's right. Amateur hour. Yeah. Amateur hour.
Here's a football question.
One other thing I hate about Christmas.
Yeah.
Is broadly, I'm pro Christmas. I think it goes on too long. But Christmas cards, I don't get the point of Christmas cards. They look shit. They always look shit. Mm-hmm. By a careful process of not having sent it for 30 years, I now only get three. I get one from my godparents, one from my financial advisor, and one from Dennis Tewitt.
Finally, it's all been brought back to football. South Florida Paradises, which club have you shamelessly ignored too much this year? Who have we not spoken about enough this year? I was doing a quick check down the league tables. I believe the highest team that I don't think I've said out loud on Football Weekly in 2021 is Huddersfield Town. I don't believe that team has left my lips this year. And I don't know anything. Maybe Jan Sievert's still there. Don't know. Perhaps Andy Booth is still scoring goals for them. Perhaps, is it Peter Jackson with the sort of long, greasy black hair is still the chairman?
I'm pretty sure Andy Sievert isn't still there, but I'm now going to check.
Yeah,
Andy Sievert.
Sorry,
Jan Sievert.
The fellow who used to be the PE teacher go there? Danny Cowley.
The Cowleys, are they there? I am. Captain Picard is their celebrity fan, isn't he?
And Howard Wilson. I mean, dead now. Yeah. But in the days when he wasn't dead, he was a celebrity fan.
They don't bring Harold Wilson there like Weekend at Bernie's, do they? To the,
well, if anybody could do that, I think Jean-Luc Picard probably could.
On a golf cart with Harold Wilson waving his arm around. Carlos Corberan is the manager.
Oh, of course, yeah. No, I did know that.
Any advances on Huddersfield? Any advances on Huddersfield Town?
I've just looked at the Championship table. I'm slightly shocked to see Stoke sixth. When did that happen?
I had absolutely no idea. But I believe Stoke always get mentioned. Probably not in a, you know, every couple of weeks, someone will make a Stoke reference.
Yeah, they're sort of proverbial rather than actual. The references,
good point.
Looking at the Championship table, I don't think QPR ever get a fair crack.
Oh, I was going to say that.
Fifth. And Blackburn Rovers are third. Wow. it's quite a long time. Considering the amount of time we used to spend discussing Blackburn Rovers when Steve Keane was in charge and the Venkies and all that. Yeah, they've been widely ignored for a very long time.
You know the amazing thing about Tony Mowbray?
He's not Scottish.
Well, not only that, but he was born on the day that Kennedy was shot.
Oh, no.
So there was the deal that day was Aldous Huxley, C.S. Lewis and Kennedy departed the world. Tony Mowbray came into it. And I think that's fair. I think that's a reasonable trade.
Do you think the chaps from the, you know, the Not the Top 20 podcast are fearing with this kind of searing analysis? Oh, Blackburn a third. Cynthia says, I would very much appreciate an update on Barry Glendenning and his efforts to adopt a cat.
I haven't made any efforts to adopt a cat. This is the very short answer. I quite like the idea of having a cat, but I worry that it wouldn't like me, and then
I don't like anybody.
I even though it's very little responsibility, I still think it's too much responsibility for me.
The next door neighbor's dog ran into our garden earlier today. I just got the pest literally and started sort of licking everything, and about 5 minutes before the pest control man had come to, you know, basically poison the walls so that the rats and the spiders die, because you get a lot of those. And I just kept looking at this dog thinking, this dog is going to die in front of us, because, and this is the first time I've met my neighbour, and the first thing that's going to happen is I'm going to have to pick up her dead dog. But currently the dog is still alive. I don't believe she's a Football Weekly listener. So so I'll keep you posted.
I had a very unusual visitor in the garden this morning, Max.
Was it Craig Pawson?
No, it was okay. It was perched on one of the trees. It was a sparrowhawk.
Oh.
It was beautiful. That's more Christmassy.
That is.
Than your poor dog being poisoned. Honestly.
I don't know how rare a sparrowhawk is, Philippe, so I can't.
Well, it's fairly unusual to see them like five meters from your back, you know, from your window.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a football-based question? I don't probably need to preface those questions on this podcast, do I? What is your favourite moment of this year? I think I know what Barry's is going to be. So, fuck it. Get out of the way, Barry.
My favourite moment of this year was sitting in your flat with Ellis James and John Bruin and producer Joel as we watched England fail to win the final of Euro 2020.
Get over it and hit the
Saka has the score.
It's been good though.
It's Saka! And it's Italy who are the champions of Europe.
Because I was so scared that they would win, and the absolute relief when they didn't, and the look on your face, your stupid face, when Bukayo Saka missed that. Well, he missed the final penalty, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was just absolutely made my day, my year.
And perhaps the current Mrs. Rushton's reaction as well. Oh, my days.
Oh, I'm fucking fine.
But about 5 seconds after it had happened, the funny thing is about losing the Euros is, and I'm not saying I won't get giddy again in the World Cup, even though I'll be sort of conflicted about whether I should even be watching it in, you know, next Christmas, is by the next morning I was fine. You know, like I wasn't bothered. Like I built myself up for a lifetime of that moment. You know, like I built myself up this absolute lifetime of thinking, I just want to see England win a major tour. And I still do in my life. I just like to see that. But I was surprised, and I don't, maybe this means I'm not as much of a football fan as I purport to be, or I have a sense of perspective, but I didn't wake up feeling empty and bereft. I just got a train to Cornwall. I don't know. I mean, and I'm Wilson, you're not like sort of dyed-in-the-wool England fan like I am.
No, I'm mildly preferring them to win something, but it doesn't really bother me. But I actually had a sense, this strange sense when Bonucci scored, and I sort of was pretty certain from then that England weren't going to win it, that actually, because the circumstances were so horrible, because Wembley was so grim, because it was very hard to feel any great sense of unity with all England fans who were there. I mean, clearly most who were there were fine, but there was such an unpleasant element there. I think there had been something lurking below the surface of me going, thinking, if we do win something, I don't want it to be like this. And then when Bonucci scored, that brought that really to the surface.
Did you have this feeling? And I think I mentioned this, and I can't remember if I mentioned it during the Euros or sort of afterwards. I had this weird feeling as we got closer to the final. Obviously, like 99% of me wanted to win, but 1% of me has lived with, you know, the sort of deification of Bobby Moore and Bobby Charlton and Jeff Hurst and all those players and Gordon Banks, et cetera, et cetera, that I couldn't bear to think of current players who I have seen have shit games occasionally be put on the same level. Because obviously I never saw Bobby Moore have a bad game of football.
Oh, well, I mean, you should watch Poland versus England from 1973 in Katowice because he's awful that day.
It's a fraud.
But that's one of the interesting things. I mean, I've been doing a lot of research recently on 66 and reading the newspaper stuff beforehand. There was a game in the March 66 when England beat West Germany 1-0. I think it's pretty... Hurst isn't playing, but I think apart from that, it's pretty much the World Cup winning team.
Mm-hmm.
England win 1-0 with a goal from Nobby Stiles and they get booed off. There's this whole debate afterwards of Ramsey sort of saying English fans don't understand football, that... Yeah, when we play seven passes in a row, they start booing us because they want the ball to go forward, and that's not football. And the paper saying, you know, you've got to find a way of unleashing Greaves. George Eastman's got to come back in the midfield. We're too negative, too defensive. Peters wasn't in that side, obviously, because he only came in very late. So I think it must have been 9 of 11 was the same. You sort of see the criticism of players who you know that sort of 3 months later, 4 months later, are going to be winning the World Cup. And you're right, we sort of just assumed that 11 was somehow set in stone and inevitable and universally brilliant. But even in the group stage, they were getting slagged off. You know, the game against Uruguay when they drew 0-0 the first game, and there's this sort of outrage that England could conceivably be so boring. But then I also noticed, how many chances in total do you think there were in the final, in the stats? Now, I suspect this isn't necessarily shots as we regard them today, but how many chances in 120 minutes in total?
Over 30?
Oh, yes.
Well over 30.
85.
Are you joking?
What?
85.
It's something like 30 shots on target, 85 chances. And people are going, it wasn't a great game of football. Neither side. Both teams a little bit cautious. Thank Christ.
But the difficulty I have then is I can never have England win a tournament. I need them to win like 5 tournaments and then it's okay. Does that make any sense? Like, I really had this deep sense of...
Well, yeah, and the other thing that reminded me of was my dad always said that when Sunderland won the FA Cup in 73, and he'd grown up, he'd been gone to Sunderland regularly from the end of the war, so when he first started going, Sunderland were only 2 played seasons. Obviously, you got the war years when football wasn't played, but you got only 2 played seasons from being league champions. 3, so they won the league in 35-6. So he grew up with his perpetual sense of decline. He sees them win the FA Cup, you know, in these glorious circumstances in 73. And he said, everybody had been whistling for the final whistle for the final 20 minutes or something, they're clinging on. And he said, when the final whistle went, his first reaction wasn't euphoria, it was sadness, because he knew he'd never be that good again. And I think as and when England do win something, it'll be similar, that actually it's the first one that's euphoric. So it's a bit like winning the Ashes in 2005 after the gap from 86-7 has meant more than subsequent Ashes wins, because it was a thing that almost seemed impossible. Winning the Ryder Cup in 85 after however long that was, 30 years, has meant a lot more than subsequent Ryder Cups. And I think it'll be true with England. When it does finally happen, it will be euphoric, but also it'll be tinged by the sense that this is as good as this gets, because you need the famine to really enjoy the first feast.
Which makes me wonder if, like I've said this many times, I don't envy people who support successful football teams. Like because your expectations go up, you know, like how good can it get for Man City or Liverpool, or how bad? You know, like Liverpool did have that big drought.
I wouldn't put Liverpool in that class, actually.
Maybe you're right.
Because there's always a sentiment that the success is achieved through a type of football that itself is so exciting that it is not a given, that they don't have actually the resources of Man City or PSG or even
true,
Chelsea. So I say, you know, but it's amazing that, you know, I we were talking about our favorite moments of the season, and when I started thinking about it, I started to wonder, what do we remember of this year? And I was thinking, actually, I remember nothing. So we are in a continuum, which is not a continuum anymore, because the seasons have been moved from one bit to the next. And we've lost our sense of time in a way. And that things I thought happened in 2021 happened in 2020 and vice versa. So I really struggled with that, Max. And I don't know if it's been the same for you, because I was going to say that the only thing I can really remember, my favorite moment, was going back to the stadium to support my team. That was my favorite moment by a distance, even though we were walloped on that day.
Actually, that's right. My favorite moment is that nice man inviting, because he listens to the pod, inviting me to bring a couple of mates to prove he wasn't a psychopath, to watch Cambridge United play at Brisbane Road, because his flat, the flat he was renting, overlooked Leyton Orient. And in footballing terms, that was an absolute, what was weird was it was such a wonderful moment. And I went with two great friends who probably, had that game just been in a stadium with fans, the two of them would never have gone, because they're sort of not massive football fans. And I'd have been like, do I want to go on my own to watch, you know, I don't want to go on my own to watch football matches. So I may not have even gone. And the fact that, you know, like you were just there was like some Cambridge fans had booked an Airbnb the other side of the stadium, and we were up there, you know, and God, it was like the best corporate experience I've had, because you could drink in the stadium because you weren't in the stadium, and you know, you could get Deliveroo, the whole thing. And like I was videoing a corner, which is obviously sacrilegious to film a football match, but also the noise I make when my team scores is much more sort of Joe Pasquale high pitched, and obviously I've never really heard it at a ground, because even at Cambridge, there's enough people to cover it. So no, thank you for reminding me that, Philippe. Wilson, I should ask you that question before we end part one.
Well, I had to actually check it happened this year, because I sort of knew it had to have been this year, but it seems like such a long time ago. But it was in March and Sunderland and Papa John's. But I've seen us win a thing. And the great thing is, the thing that doesn't matter. So I still think if we do win something else, that'll still have a sense of that was amazing.
Perfect. Right, that'll do for part one. We'll go into part two with some festive messages from some of your favourite Football Weekly panellists.
Hi there, it's Barney Runner here saying Merry Christmas to all Football Weekly listeners. Hope everybody is having a good break and enjoying the tidings of the season. Be careful out there. Don't socialise in large groups. Don't get too close to people. These aren't COVID guidelines, it's just general advice. And hope you all have a good break and see you in the new year.
Hi everyone, it's Ed Ahrens. Merry Christmas to all the Football Weekly listeners. Hope that Santa brought you everything that you hoped for, and see you on the other side. Cheers.
Hi, Susie Rack here. Next year is absolutely huge for women's football, with a home Euros next summer in England. So rest up and get ready. Happy Christmas and New Year to all of our readers and listeners.
Bei einer Therapie sollten wir uns sicher fühlen können, um unsere tiefsten Gefühle mit einer Person zu teilen, die uns helfen möchte. In einem neuen Podcast von Wondery und Bloomberg, der Therapeut von nebenan, erfahrt ihr die Geschichte eines Mannes, der uns erzählt, was passieren kann, wenn die Person, die deine intimsten Geheimnisse kennt, ihr Wissen zum eigenen Vorteil nutzt. Hör dir der Therapeut von nebenan kostenlos an, auf Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music oder wo auch immer du Podcasts hörst.
Egal welchen Stil Sie pflegen, egal welche Strategie Sie anwenden, wir haben das richtige Tool für Ihr Trading. IC Markets, Ihr Online-Broker für Forex-CFDs. Profitieren Sie von erstklassigen Handelsbedingungen, hervorragendem 24/7-Support und blitzschneller Orderausführung. Starten Sie jetzt durch mit Ihrem Demokonto auf icmarkets.eu/de. IC Markets. Handeln auf einem höheren Level. CFDs sind komplexe Instrumente und bergen aufgrund der Hebelwirkung ein hohes Risiko, schnell Geld zu verlieren. 73,59% der Kunden von Kleinanlegern verlieren Geld beim Handel mit CFDs bei diesem Anbieter. Sie sollten prüfen, ob sie verstehen, wie CFDs funktionieren und ob sie das hohe Risiko, ihr Geld zu verlieren, eingehen können.
Hi everyone, Nikki here. Just wanted to wish you all a buon Natale e buone feste. Happy Christmas. I hope you all get to eat your panettone this Christmas, just like all of those nervous Italian football managers who are worried they might be getting the boot before they get the chance.
A Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everyone who listens to the pod and to my fellow contributors. Not so much in the way of best wishes for Barry, Bill, because it's Barry, and also to the always patronising Max, who ran out in this great country as soon as things got a little bit tough. Merry Christmas, everyone.
So, here's to plenty more Football League frolics and car park capers in 2022. Looking forward to mastering the magic roundabout in Swindon when Man City come to town in the FA Cup. But for now, Merry Christmas.
Archie here from the kebab shop, saying Frohe Weihnachten and wishing you all a guten Rutsch, which means good slide into the new year. Germans actually say that. Can confirm. Yeah, see you in 2022. Bye.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Happy Christmas, everyone. Ian writes, since Barry is being credited with the turnaround in fortunes of Iheanacho and now Jordan Ayew, should we also credit him as the motivating factor behind Spain's remarkable Euro World Cup Euro run from 2008 to 2012 after this scathing dismissal in the 2006 World Cup Guardian podcast? Joel, could you play it?
I mean, I think if people were doubting Spain after the Ukraine game, there were certain favourable factors. Tonight's game, as you said earlier, a big test of character, and I think people are going to have to start changing their perspectives on the Spanish. Barry, have you changed yours?
Never. They will never win anything in my lifetime. I'm convinced of it. Who's that guy asking the question? That's not you, Max.
No, it was a good question, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up. One of my earliest football memories, so I would have been eight or nine, was Northern Ireland beating Spain at their own World Cup in 1982. And I remember we were on holidays, on a family holiday in Spain, watching it in a restaurant with all these waiters absolutely going ballistic because Northern Ireland beat Spain. And they just had a reputation as serial bottlers and underachievers and chokers, which they finally managed to throw off in or put behind them in 2008, was it? So there is hope for England yet, I suppose.
I haven't really talked to you about Jordan Ayew's sort of incredible return to form and scoring a goal after I think the direct quote is something like, "I have no idea what Jordan Ayew is for." I think that's what it was.
Yeah, and since I know Wilson has quite strong feelings about Jordan Ayew as well on the international front, but he never, to my mind, seemed to bring a whole lot to the Crystal Palace party, but kept getting picked. And he'd gone 43 games without scoring, Premier League games, I think. And then he put in that wonderful performance in their last game but one. Don't ask me who it was against because I can't remember. And then scored in the game after. So I do seem to have sparked a return to form from him. And long may it continue for Jordan.
What's the worst prediction you've ever made, Wilson? I mean, apart from presumably Ronaldo is the problem at United.
What? Ronaldo is the problem at United.
No, I was teasing you.
Hard to tell so many dickheads about these days. I just thought you'd join their ranks.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Well, Jordan Ayew, yeah, Nick has heard me, as he mentioned on whenever it was, a recent podcast. He's heard me sort of despair of Jordan Ayew repeatedly at Cups of Nations. Because I think he's clearly kind of got an enormous amount of talent. And I think he is getting better, but for a long time he had the sort of lowest brain to talent ratio of any player I'd ever seen. And he was just always offside. He was always making the wrong run. He was always taking the wrong option. I just saw him mess up so often for Ghana. And the weird thing is his brother, you know, Dede Ayew, I think is one of the most sort of intelligent, hardworking, I think hugely talented, but also, really gets the most out of himself. Really sort of brave player. I remember there's a quarterfinal of the Cup of Nations in 2012 against Tunisia when they absolutely kicked the shit out of him and he was just kept coming back. It was brilliant. And then Jordan was just sort of like the complete opposite. There's nothing there. And I sort of think back to the World Cup group stage in 2014 when I'm not sure if Germany would have gone out of the World Cup, but they'd definitely been under pressure. The Ghana were, I think they were leading 2-1 against Germany. And Ayew went through on the left. And if he'd rolled the ball square, Asamoah Gyan had a tap-in. And he had the shot and it was saved. And Miroslav Klose came for bench and equalised. You know, if Ghana got 3-1 up there, I would have to check the group again. But I think there's a possibility Germany could have gone out. And obviously they then go on to win the World Cup. And it was all, basically Germany's World Cup triumph is entirely to do with Jordan Ayew being really, really stupid and selfish at a bad moment. So, I've been completely with Barry on Jordan Ayew. But, last couple of games he has played really well. Worst prediction? Recently David Moyes is the person I got badly wrong. I thought he was shot and he's obviously done brilliantly for West Ham. So, and I noticed just as I've begun to accept that to myself, West Ham's form has fallen off a cliff. So...
Philippe, I don't really see you in the prediction game, Philippe, unless you've made,
It's a game I try to avoid as much as I possibly can, Max, because I tend to get it seriously wrong. I think I probably suffer from excessive optimism when it comes to the team I support. And the number of times I've said, well, this is the year, and this wasn't. Actually, it's pretty much every single year since 2004, and I think you can guess which team I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean... I do a predictions game where I predict all the Premier League results. I'm absolutely terrible. But then they show you the league table had all your results come in. And routinely, Tottenham win the league by 30 to 35 points. That's just completely stupid. Samuel says, "Hi, I think the pod is brilliant, especially the more recent turn towards bigger issues in football. This isn't one of those, but I think it's a minor sensible point. One change I'd like to see in the game would be the easier use of words like penis and testicles for the men's game. I cringe when I hear awkward commentary about undercarriage, target, two from Max in the episode I just listened to, a painful place, or references to the upper groin accompanied by audible smirking. It is fine to say he's down because he's been hit in the testicles. That hurts. People can be uncomfortable when talking about their genitals, but this added mystery means that some boys and men don't seek help for important issues because they either don't have the right words or they're embarrassed. What do you think? I hope you keep up the excellent work. Particular shout out to Troy, who's been a fantastic addition to the squad. Kind regards, Sam. I'm still, in my mind, a 10-year-old boy, Barry, so...
Well, it seems a slightly odd and not particularly festive bit of correspondence. I did notice in the cricket over the past couple of days, Joe Root got a throwdown straight in the plums from or plum in the plums even before during the warm up yesterday, and then got another fastball straight into his bollocks, penis, groin during play, and he the poor guy was waddling up and down.
There's
the
a weird side. Weird Father Jack quality to that.
So much pain, but. The commentators insisted on saying he'd been hit in the abdomen, which he clearly hadn't. The abdomen is the stomach area. He had not been hit in the abdomen. He'd no more been hit in the abdomen than been hit in the shoulder or the head. He had been hit in the bollocks twice. And I really felt for him, you know, because when your luck's out, your luck is out, as if things weren't going badly enough for England.
Mitchell Stark even started laughing, didn't he? Like, he actually, after he delivered the ball, he sort of put his hands up. Oh, God, poor old Joe. He was, that looks like it hurt.
But, yeah, this insistence on referring to it as him being struck in the abdomen did seem a bit Victorian, really. I don't know what it was all about, but this isn't something I have hugely strong feelings on, I just confess.
Neither do I. But anyway, Rashmi says, hello from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm looking forward to reading Jonathan Wilson's novel. Barry has been clear in the past that he couldn't be bothered to write a book, and Max has his detective story. But do we know what fictional story Philippe would love to write?
Or has written?
Oh, there we are, of course.
I used to write, unfortunately, there was no internet in those days, and all the copies have been pulped because it was for, I think, by high school magazine. I used to write sci-fi stories, if you can believe it. I had a thing about time travel, and I wrote some short stories about that. I had a couple of short
stories. Did you write Back to the Future?
No, unfortunately. But I was trying to, you know, find clever stories and clever plots and things like that. It was absolutely awful as I remember it.
Now, there is something that came up on a live show, Philippe, that I don't think has ever been discussed on the pod. That one of the many things that you did was the voice of who?
Barney Rubble. Yes. And not just Barney. I told you I was the monkey in Aladdin.
You were Barney Rubble in the Flintstones, in the French Flintstones.
Yep, correct.
Absolutely stunning.
And I had some walk-on parts or talk-on parts as well in some Bugs Bunny cartoons as well.
What did you play?
But
in Bugs
not as Bugs, not as Bugs. I think I did one Elmer or something like that. I did so many. It was like I was going to the studio at about 10 o'clock in the morning, staying until 6. The idea was to dub as many cartoons as possible for TNT. You know, remember TNT, the cartoon channel?
Yeah. Could you give us some Barney Rubble?
Nope. No, I can't.
I don't really remember what Barney said. He was just he followed Fred about, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. He had it was fairly, I don't know. Actually, I can imagine Barry could do a good Barney. But it was fairly... I mean, there was nothing extraordinary about it. It's just the fact that you hear my voice and you see this face. You think, that doesn't quite work. Oh, it did work, obviously, in the eyes of the producers. To be honest, I can't remember. I failed some other auditions as well. At one point, I was trying to get the role of a cat in some kind of animated. And the only voice I could think of was the voice of Sylvester. And I genuinely was unable to do anything but a kind of very bad imitation of Sylvester. Ah, God. Anyway, those were the days.
And the monkey in the Disney Aladdin film,
yep,
that everybody saw in France, that was you.
Yep, that was me. I did a really good scream at one point. He falls down a kind of well, a stairwell, right, or something like that.
Okay.
And I, my scream was really, really good. And so the French version is worth acquiring, if only for that.
Oh, I would love to. It's, you know, I don't know. We all knew you were the French Barney Rubble. Had you not, if you didn't see the live show where we discovered it, it was an incredible moment of complete shock. You've lived many lives, Philippe.
Oh, yes.
Rashmi was also interested to hear how we prepare the pod, some behind-the-scenes intel. why is that funny, Wilson?
Oh, the idea that any of us is prepared. I mean, about 5 minutes before we came on today, I looked at the WhatsApp and thought, oh, shit, I've got to think my best moment of the year. So I Googled when the 2021 Papa John's was. Was it actually in 2021? And it actually was, unlike the 2020 Papa John's, which is also 2021.
I do quite a lot of preparation.
Well, you wear it lightly, and I think that's to your credit.
Thank you.
I'm afraid to say I do quite a lot of preparation, even though I do, because I knew that would happen. I generally come up to each podcast armed with at least 8 pages of notes from all the weekend games, midweek games. I get up 2 hours, 3 hours before each pod to prepare. It takes a lot of effort to sound this shambolic, to paraphrase Dolly Parton.
Anyway, that'll do for part two. Here are some more messages from other Football Weekly panellists.
Hello, Football Weekly fans. It's Faye here, just wishing you a very Merry Christmas and, of course, a Happy New Year. Here's to a fantastic 2022 for everybody coming up. Up the Hatters.
Hello, Nick Ames here. Well, here we are again, and what a year it's been. So I guess, first of all, thank you, everyone, for listening, for giving us your time, your feedback, your good humour as well. Like, that's also important, and we couldn't do any of this without those things. And secondly, have a great Christmas. I know as we speak, things are a little bit uncertain, both in terms of what we can do as individuals and also the sporting calendar, but hopefully all of it pulls through, and we all enjoy our turkey or whatever else we're eating and drinking, and we'll enjoy some football over the festive schedule or two. So have a good one. I'm sure we'll be babbling away to you in any eventuality. Look after yourselves and see you on the other side.
Merry Christmas, Football Weekly listeners. Mark Langdon here, reminding you to stick to your five a day in 2022. That's beef, chicken, pork, lamb and turkey. Happy New Year.
Egal welchen Stil Sie pflegen, egal welche Strategie Sie anwenden, wir haben das richtige Tool für Ihr Trading. IC Markets, Ihr Online-Broker für Forex-CFDs. Profitieren Sie von erstklassigen Handelsbedingungen, hervorragendem 24/7-Support und blitzschneller Orderausführung. Starten Sie jetzt durch mit Ihrem Demokonto auf icmarkets.eu/de. IC Markets. Handeln auf einem höheren Level. CFDs sind komplexe Instrumente und bergen aufgrund der Hebelwirkung ein hohes Risiko, schnell Geld zu verlieren. 73,59% der Kunden von Kleinanlegern verlieren Geld beim Handel mit CFDs bei diesem Anbieter. Sie sollten prüfen, ob Sie verstehen, wie CFDs funktionieren und ob Sie das hohe Risiko, Ihr Geld zu verlieren, eingehen können.
Hello there, John Bruin here. Happy Christmas to the Football Weekly listeners. Thanks for listening this year. I'm putting up with my ums, ahs, your nose, and slowness of answering Max's questions. thanks to Max and Barry for having me on, and producer Joel and producer Ian. I wish you all the best for the new year. I won't recommend any Christmas records to you all, because I don't like Christmas records. Anyway, all the best, everybody.
Hello, everybody. It's Jordan Jarrett Bryan here. Big up Max Ruston. Big up Barry Glendenning and all the man them and all the girls them. Wishing you a thoroughly enjoyable Christmas. Thank you for booking me this year. It must have been a phenomenally enjoyable 2021 Guardian Football Weekly. Hopefully you'll book me again next year. But if you don't, I'm leaving you with this. Be safe. I love you all.
Hi, everyone. Jonathan Liu here. Just wanted to say thank you to all of our listeners over the course of 2021. We couldn't have done it without you. I mean, more specifically, we wouldn't have been able to afford to do it without you. Seeing as, you know, the whole thing runs on listener revenue and advertising revenue. So thanks for that. And also, we probably wouldn't have done it without you, because frankly, if we wanted to spend ages making a podcast that no one listens to, we'd all just have joined The Athletic. Merry Christmas.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Here's a question that I didn't ask because I didn't get around to it, but Philippe has actually done some research on it, so I'm going to ask it. Roger says, hi all, thanks for the show and all its contributors throughout the year, especially for addressing some deep dive topics that some other podcasts stay away from. Anyway, enough buttering up. Ever since I discovered their policy of only selecting locally bred Basque players, and yet being one of the three founding teams never have been relegated from La Liga, I've had a mild obsession with Athletic Bilbao. And it often makes me wonder, are there other teams around with similar, if less prolific, policies? And more importantly, hypothetically, if any club or city would adopt this approach in British football, which city region would have the best chance of a successful team? As a City fan, I've often thought, would we really be any worse off if we adopted a Yorkshire players-only policy? Bradford City, that is, he says. Anyway, congratulations on all the awards and silverware. I hope someone sees merit in releasing a pod collection of all Barry's acceptance speeches one day. Thanks. That would be a good one. The degeneration of man, they could call it. Anyway, Philippe, you've done some work.
Yes, I was. I knew there were a couple of teams which had a policy similar to that of Athletic, and the two most interesting I found were an Ecuadorian team called Deportivo El Nacional from Quito, who have nothing but Ecuadorian players in their squad, and were at one point doing very, very well indeed in Ecuador, six-time champions, I believe, or something like that. But they're now in Serie B in Ecuador. And the other one has never been relegated either. And I think so that might be a quiz question here in the making. And it's Chivas, the Mexican team, the Goats, only ever play players from Mexico. And very often, and I have also a tradition of recruiting locally. So it does, there are equivalents of Athletic Bilbao. I'm sure Jonathan knows a couple more. Because I was wondering, is there a Corsican club that does that? Then the answer is no. But there might be some others. Jonathan, do you have any that you can think of?
I'm not aware of any. I mean, it's one of those regulations that I think you have to be really, really careful with. And I think Athletic have just about kept on the right side of it, that you know, it can become very exclusionary, and particularly in a world when there's huge movements of people. There's a danger it becomes, it can become racist. As I say, I don't think that is true of Athletic, but it's obviously a potential risk. But what I would say, and I haven't done any research, I just know this.
I mean, you must have researched it at some point in your life, unless you were born with this information. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I just read it. You know, if you adopted some sort of only allowed to pick players from your county in England, well, in the 20th century, County Durham produced more England internationals than any other part of England, which, given that it's by no means the most populous county, is a remarkable thing. So Sunderland would have, I guess that's why Sunderland were quite good in the first half of the 20th century. And in the 21st century, Southeast London produces way, way more. So Charlton, I guess. So, County Durham and South East London are the two great hotbeds of English football.
Otherwise, I would say Paris, which is strange when you think there's only one big club, a very big club in Paris. But by and large, you know, you think something like over 50%, I would say, of the current French squad. So if you can recruit there, I think you're doing quite well.
Oh, I mean, you know, in Celtic in 67, I mean, it wasn't a policy yes. to only pick Glasgow-born players, but was it every player in that team that won the European Cup was born within 20 miles of Parkhead?
I think 50 miles, but yes, absolutely, yeah.
Sam says, what is the greatest goal in history that Barry thinks he couldn't score?
I would, off the top of my head, I'll go with the goal Marco van Basten scored to win Euro 88. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be able to score that without at least practicing quite a lot.
Squeeze says, tell us about Barry's header again. We never really deconstructed this because we were quite drunk this time last year, if anyone wants to go back to the Christmas special last year. And at one point, Barry talked about scoring a header, which I feel it transpired was an own goal.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. It was in a game in my old school, and my mate Mick Littleton crossed the ball to me. I was way out, you know, sort of on the edge of the penalty area, and I headed it as hard as I could. And I was really bad. I was like Trevor Brooking. I didn't score many headers, you know.
Were you like Trevor Brooking in any other way?
No.
No, okay.
No. That was the only thing I had in common with Trevor Brooking. Neither of us scored many headers. I connected perfectly, more by accident than design, I suspect. And the ball hit the post and then hit Beaver, this guy who was in goal, and then went over the line. So, yeah, I guess it was an own goal because technically a shot that hits the post isn't on target. Now, this was back in the days before Optostats, I hasten to add. But, yeah, so it's a Beaver own goal, but such was the power of the header that it hit the post with such velocity he was unable to keep it out.
Well done, Barry.
So technically it's Beaver's goal, but I imagine he doesn't want it. And I do.
What I'm looking forward to is now an annual tradition of Barry talking us through the same header every Christmas until we're all fired or until podcasts don't exist. Ian says, thanks all for the pods over the years. Certainly the past couple, which have been tough for us all. I really enjoyed the Getting to Know You pods last year. And as other listeners have said, it feels like I'm listening to friends discuss football, which is very comforting. In terms of a question, have any of the pods seen the BBC's Clean It, Fix It programme, which is narrated by the pod's very own Ellis James? Something of a welcome and pleasant surprise to hear his dulcet Welsh tones, which only add to the show. When I pointed it out to my wife, she referred to him as the What's Your Vibe guy in reference to a Twitter post Ellis put on a while back, which was classic and often used in our house. Anyway, thanks for all the laughs this year. Happy Christmas to you all. Barry, do you watch Clean It, Fix It, narrated by Ellis James?
No, I thought Ellis narrated a movie blunder show and The Secret Life of Farm Animals. They were two.
The movie blunder thing is on Channel 5, isn't it? 100 Greatest Movie Blunders.
Yeah, and I know the What's Your Vibe. I think it's something he sings to his daughter. What's your vibe? What's your scene? What's your vibe? What's your scene? I may not be doing his original composition justice, but no, I will seek out this program. What's it called?
Clean It, Fix It.
Okay. Well, I do find Ellis's dulcet tones very soothing. So
he has a wonderful voice.
I may really seek it out on the iPlayer.
Somebody did after the final of the Euros, when we were discussing the man who put the firework up his backside, did say nothing is more soothing than hearing Ellis James say the word anus. Adam says, what will be on Philippe's plate for Christmas dinner? And what is his choice of accompanying beverage?
I have ordered some fine smoked salmon from Loch Fyne. I've ordered some oysters, some scallops as well.
Now, just to point out, Philippe, in Monday's pod, mm-hmm. which no one will have heard because I only finished recording it about an hour ago, Barney is recovering from a dodgy oyster.
Oh, dear.
I hate us to be too Football Weekly that most of our panellists regularly consume oysters. Just be careful of the oyster, Philippe, I would say. Anyway, carry on.
And the thing is that when we French and we celebrate Christmas Eve more than we could celebrate Christmas Day. So Christmas Day for us is a bit the equivalent of Boxing Day, when, you know, you don't do much. But the big thing is Christmas Eve. And in my family, it's always been seafood. So it's going to be seafood, as I said. So salmon, scallops, oysters. And to accompany it, I've got a really, really fine Jura Chardonnay, which I think knocks the spots off most Burgundies, and which I've been looking forward to uncork on that evening. It's going to be spectacular, I think. There you go.
Tom says, and so slightly paying homage to the question that I asked Paul Merson on the Sky Sports pilot that was never turned into a TV show. Tom says, would you rather have pigs in blankets for fingers or mince pies for feet? Barry.
Well, mince pies are very buttery, aren't they? I think they would dissolve if I had them for feet quite quickly.
True.
They're not very robust mince pies. Or properly made mince pies.
Yeah. And pigs in blankets are quite like fingers anyway, aren't they, I guess?
Well, I mean, I have to say, I wouldn't have them for fingers for very long.
And that would make your work, you know, you have to type at speed, don't you?
Yeah.
During football matches. Yeah, yeah. And that would be hard. You'd have to go mince pies professionally.
I would. I mean, to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of the mince pie.
No, but that doesn't really affect this.
But I got my pigs in blankets this morning because I had to, for the second year running, I've had to cancel the same holiday that I was going to take over Christmas. So I went out at 8 this morning to make sure I did get my turkey and everything. So I can happily confirm that there will be turkey this Christmas in the Wilson house. There will be pigs in blankets. There'll be a lot of sausage meat, and there'll be some parsnips and some carrots. And if anybody's interested in my wine, I'm going to have a Furst Spätburgunder with it. I think turkey can hold a very light red, and this Spätburgunder is very light.
I like that me and Barry are definitely in the, I'll probably have some white and then some red after a few beers, and have some beers after the red, and then feel a bit sad.
Have you had any of that Spätburgunder?
Yeah, I have, and I really like it. It's quite light, very
fruity. I've got
fruity.
A couple of bottles. So.
Cherries as well. That will go well if you do, if you've got something like cranberry jelly or something like that. That will really complement it very well indeed.
Jacob's Creek. Barry?
I've actually got in several bottles of Chateauneuf du Pape, Max, which were on special offer.
Blimey. I better up my game, don't I?
You stick to your carafe of Blue Nun.
Maybe I'm... Who knew that I was the man of the people on this on this podcast? Just a couple of nice emails to finish with. Patrick says, good morning, Football Weekly panellists. Just wanted to say thank you for all the pods you put together each and every week. Despite the current pandemic affecting my everyday life, it's always great to look forward to the podcast and hear the panel's thoughts on my favourite sport. Wishing you all the best and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Stay safe and look after yourselves. Andrew says, Max Barry, long-time listener, first-time correspondent here. Wishing everyone at Football Weekly a very Merry Christmas. Barry, get well soon. I believe the moment that he sang What's Your Vibe was the moment that COVID left his body, because not even that deadly disease could have coped with that moment.
Well, I agreed to do this pod because I wouldn't have to do any preparation or get up early or anything. And I, about 5 minutes in, I realised it was a terrible idea. So I would like to formally apologise to the listeners if I was not only not at 100%, but barely at 50%.
To be honest, I've noticed no discernible difference from any normal pod performance.
And that performance, that rendition of What's Your Vibe, What's Your Scene, mm-hmm. that really was ill-advised. I now feel like I need to go to bed.
Anyway, Andrew says, Football Weekly has become an essential public service down here in Wellington, New Zealand. Your reassuring voice is keenly missed and a speedy return to the pod much anticipated. That's about you, Barry. Thank you all for sharing so much of your lives with us. I think of Barry each Friday morning when the bins are placed on the curb for collection. I don't know why. And I wish Max, Mrs. Rushton, plus the newest Little Rushton, all the very best in Australia. Thank you for having the courage to tackle difficult issues and for your considerable skill in diplomacy when discussing sensitive matters, vis-a-vis what to call a cock. I presume that's been proving in part two. Le bavantre. If public houses survive the pandemic, we all need to buy the Football Weekly team a pint of your favourite medicine as a small thanks for the genuine joy you bring to many. I presume after hearing what Wilson and Philippe like to drink, you withdraw that offer. So thank you, Andrew. Appreciate that. Tim sent a message quite a long time ago regarding a message that we got from Chris. One of those self-indulgent ones that we don't know whether we should read or not, but make us sound better than we really are. The other day about how the pod has supported him through his mental issue struck a chord with me. I'm 36. I suffer from CPTSD. And the last 18 months have been some of the darkest of my life. But the light in those many weeks has been you and the gang. I love football so much. It was mine and my late father's thing. He died when I was 15. And the way you all cover it is amazing. The sincerity on topics such as gambling, racism and homophobia is solemn and provocative. And then the irreverent chat about Endeavour, Langdon's vegetables and Wilson's misanthropic ways have got me through those times. Those 2-3 hours a week is an escape. I don't think you realise just how important the pod is to so many people. You've indirectly saved my life. Thank you to you and the gang, from Tim. I mean, I'm sure, Tim, you are overstaying it slightly, but we appreciate everyone listening, because if you didn't, they'd sack us and get other people. So look, thank you for everyone who's emailed in. Have a lovely Christmas, everybody. Have a lovely Christmas to you guys as well. Wilson, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Happy Christmas.
Thank you, Philippe.
Joyeux Noël one more time, Max.
Joyeux Noël. Cheers, Barry.
Nolig honnachwit a vax.
Are you okay?
Yeah. It's the okay, Irish good. For...
Yeah, I know it was. I know it was. Right, we'll be back. I don't know when, but we will soon. Hopefully the football will be on. Otherwise, we'll just do more of this shite, won't we? see you soon.
This is The Guardian.